I'm not much of a fan of the phrase life hack, but I am grateful for the sentiment. I like the idea that there's some kind of cosmic cheat sheet for navigating life's more puzzling bureaucracies. So we're about to go down the rabbit hole of a serious life hack with our next guests. These are travellers and readers of the fine print par excellence. You may have seen a profile in a recent issue of Rolling Stone magazine of Ben Schlappig. Ben's a man who has turned his passion for travel into a profession, traversing the globe, collecting and using frequent flyer points, and he joins us from a studio in LA. Hello, Ben.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Great to have you with us. And we're also joined by Steve Huey. Steve's an Australian who advises his business clients about how best to use their points. He's in our Sydney studio. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
Okay, so gentlemen, I am ready to be schooled. Ben, I want to start with you, and I want to understand how you came to take this on as your area of expertise. I understand it dates back to childhood for you.
Yes, exactly. So kind of since a very young age, I've been obsessed with travel. My family is from Germany, so I was always from a young age traveling back and forth between the U.S. and Germany. And at the age of about 13, I started reading online about kind of the world of miles and points. And I quickly discovered that instead of paying for economy travel always, I could accrue those miles at a cheaper cost. And when we went to visit our family in Germany, we could be flying first or business class instead for less. So I guess that's how it all started.
There is nothing quite like a 13-year-old boy for reading the fine print on something. Like that is the, if there's a special superpower for a 13-year-old boy, it's detail.
I've always kind of been obsessed with figuring out systems and figuring out kind of the fine print of things. It's something I've always enjoyed even prior to that. So when you kind of combine my love of travel and my love of finding good deals and reading terms, that was really just kind of the perfect intersection.
And so did your parents just give you a free rein to kind of make executive decisions about the best way to book? At what point did you become the family's travel agent?
So it was a tough selling point because at first what I did back when I was about 14, I started is something called mileage running. So mileage running is when you get on a plane for the sole purpose of earning miles. So starting around that age, I would basically fly alone every weekend around the country, typically about 8 flights a weekend, and I'd be flying for about 36 hours nonstop. So it was certainly a selling point. It was difficult to convince my parents of that at first, but kind of once I showed them the benefits of miles and points, they were completely aboard.
Ben, I don't want to get distracted by a tangent, but can I just double check, do you like airline food? Do you enjoy watching television on very small screens?
I don't think anybody loves airline food, but there is something fun about eating 7 miles up in the sky at 35,000 feet. I think that's somehow exciting while going 500 miles an hour. So in a twisted way, I suppose I do.
I kind of love it. I suspect if I asked, you would have seen more Sandra Bullock films than anyone else in the world. But that is good to know. So having discovered that there's a way to kind of use the system, I'm really interested in this idea of flying purely for the purpose of accruing points. Does it actually work out in your favor, or is it all a big shell game where the company's secretly always going to win?
Well, I think kind of they've made these programs by design so complex that most people, I think, end up losing when they try to kind of get involved. But I think if you really understand how the systems work, the complexity actually works to your advantage. It's kind of a two-way street. So just to kind of give an example, every weekend I would be booking maybe a $200 ticket, which would get me about 8 segments flying, and I would earn somewhere around 20,000 miles. So, for example, at the time, it took 100,000 miles to fly first class from the U.S. to Europe. So basically, for $1,000, we were flying first class every summer to Germany from the U.S. to Europe, which was less than economy.
Wow. I should double check, though. This would have been the glory days of cheap domestic flights. I mean, has that changed a bit? Was it easier in your adolescent years to do things like that, to kind of clock up those points?
Exactly. So I think mileage running as an art, I guess, is sort of dead in a way, unfortunately. Airfare is high, planes are full, the airlines aren't offering very lucrative promotions for actually flying because they're all making money now, and oil prices are low, so they don't have to. But there's always new methods to learn. So, for example, airlines nowadays will often just sell miles outright at a discount. And in many cases, that can represent just as good of a value as mileage running used to.
I tell you what, I would watch a sequel to Midnight Run called Mileage Run. That would, you know, I would green light that movie right now. Steve, I'm going to bring you in at this point because I'm interested. For you, the first time you started thinking about frequent flyer points was when you went on a business class flight. Was it a classic case of deciding there was no going back? You weren't willing to sit in economy again?
That's right. So my very first business class flight 7 years ago, I was greeted by name, sat down, and what's better than a chair where you can summon food and drinks and just go to sleep without moving? No, and I was hooked.
You're quite right. You've got me there. I've got no answer to that. There is nothing, literally nothing, in the known universe better than that experience. So you're flying to New Delhi for work, and you realized you wanted to keep doing it. Were you a great reader of rules and guidelines? Did you immediately think there must be a way I can do this without blowing my dough?
Yeah, so my background is a CPA, so numbers is all in my blood. And I guess like Ben, finding value, I'm probably more excited about finding value than the experience itself. So quickly I figured out that with all these frequent flyer points I was clocking up, they were worth money, and I could get myself a business class trip myself for leisure. But what's more was that I realized my peers, they didn't have a clue, and in fact, they didn't care for points at all.
Was it harder to do? I mean, you just heard the version of things that Ben talked about. Was it harder to accrue points in Australia? Were there fewer kind of options when it came to mileage running?
Yeah, definitely when compared to the US market, in comparison, Australia's much harder. So along the way of how to get more points, I figured out, well, credit cards was the best way to get points in the most consistent way. I tried to maximise my points, but I can only spend so much money myself. So then I figured out, well, who else spends a lot more money? And that's other people, like other small businesses. They spend a hell of a lot more money, so a lot more opportunity with them.
So, Ben, I'm curious, because for you, your trigger is your love of travel. So is the accruing points on credit cards, do you get the same kick out of that, or is that a much lesser way of clocking up these valuable points?
I do. I agree completely. I think that's kind of, for me at least, also half the fun probably is that you're getting a great value. So to some degree, the actual redemption doesn't matter. It's about the fact you're getting an amazing deal. Admittedly, I love the travel as well. I love flying first class, but there is just a thrill in getting a $20,000 or $30,000 ticket just on miles.
So how many credit cards do you own, if you don't mind me asking?
I have, at any given point, I have about, I would say, at least 30 to 40 open credit cards.
Oh my God, my heart rate just spiked. I'm having an anxiety attack there. Surely this is not something that you'd be able to advise just anyone to do. There's a fair risk of trouble living your life that way, isn't there?
Well, I think at the end of the day, you have to be a responsible consumer. And that's kind of my biggest caution always, is that if you're somebody who can't use credit cards responsibly, if you're somebody who would be likely to carry a balance or to not pay their bill on time, it's a terrible idea. But if you're well-organized, kind of the rewards from having a lot of credit cards are incredible.
So does that dictate the way you live your life in other spheres? I mean, do you then know, I have to use this credit card if I'm buying groceries and this one if I'm staying in a hotel? And is that the way you make those many, many cards work for you?
There is no decision I make on a day-to-day basis where I don't think of the implications of miles and points, from dining to which gas station to go to everything. I consider miles and points in every decision I make, always. And that's why my website is called One Mile at a Time, because literally I make decisions 1 mile at a time.
I kind of wish I had that same clarity of purpose, I'm going to be honest. So, Steve, when you're advising your clients, you know, you've taken this from something that you've recognized as a personal advantage to founding your own consultancy in it 3 years ago. What are the tricks of the trade? What do you tell your clients to get them started on the brave new world of frequent flyer points?
Yeah, definitely. The trick of the trade, I think, is always start with the end in mind. Is most people actually don't know where they want to go on holidays. But if you do have a trip in mind, then you can figure out the best frequent flyer program that takes you there. And then the next piece is about finding the best reward card that earns you the best miles for every dollar that you spend. So therefore, you're getting closer to your trip every time.
What about accessing flights where points can be used? I mean, that's not always the easiest. Every time I kind of retroactively think, oh, maybe I can use some frequent flyer points on this, I discover not on that flight, or not if I'm going there, or I have to go to an airport in kind of some weird obscure place and then spend as much money catching the train back again.
Well, definitely finding flights is the hardest bit, and I guess that's what the portion of my consultancy is all about, is making it really easy for our customers. They just need to spend the money, earn the points, and then we'll find and book their flights for them. But the key thing, one of the key things, is about having flexibility and understanding how the system works, but not about having to fly to somewhere which is quite a bit of a leisure destination where there's not many seats. So ultimately, it's about supply and demand and working out where best points take you and maximize that.
So, Ben, what about you? What are your kind of basic tricks of the trade if you're advising someone else to get in on this game?
Yeah, I would say, first of all, along similar lines, as far as booking award seats goes, that's kind of the biggest frustration everybody has. They find the seats, or they want to find the seats, but they can't. I think most people are aware that airlines make some award space usually available when they first open their schedule, so maybe a year out. That being said, what most people don't realize is that the airlines actually make a lot of award seats available last minute. So really the best time to book an award ticket in first class to just about anywhere is the day of departure, a day before, a week before even. So I think most people don't realize that when tickets are most expensive, if you're paying cash, which would be last minute, that's also often the best time to redeem miles because the airlines make those unsold seats available.
You're a cowboy. You're living on the edge. look at that. The pure adrenaline of booking at the last minute.
I've often booked flights on the way to the airport where I go to the airport not having booked my flight yet, but I see the space and I know it's going to be there, and I go.
I need you as my traveling companion. But what does this mean for your friends and your friendships? And does it mean that you're doomed to always be a solitary traveler because that's the only way that you can make this system work?
Well, so I live in hotels full-time and I travel full-time, so in my case, that sort of is my life, that I'm constantly on the move. That being said, it works out really well for me because I'm an introvert. On the other hand, I have friends kind of all over the place. So it works out well because I might not have seen my friend for a month and then I'll say, hey, I'm going to be in Sydney or Singapore or San Francisco tomorrow. Do you want to meet up? So it works out surprisingly well.
How do the airlines respond to it? Do you think they like this? I mean, as you said, frequent flyer points are a system that they've built up very carefully over time to get the outcomes they want. How do they respond to you as someone who they must now recognize as a person who's working the system?
I think it's important to understand that at least in the U.S. and in a lot of other countries as well, frequent flyer programs are hugely profitable. These are not cost centers for the airlines. They're generating literally billions of dollars in revenue through them because nowadays most miles aren't actually earned through flying. They're earned through credit cards, through kind of affiliate programs, stuff like that. So these are hugely profitable businesses, and I think hopefully they look at us kind of as their biggest advocates. We love what they do, we love their programs, and we're really engaged members. And what could you want more than a really engaged member, in my opinion?
Well, yeah. Fair enough too. Steve, is the same thing true of Australian Airlines? Are they as receptive to seeing it get worked?
Yeah, I would totally agree. Like, the frequent flyer programs now are really just a massive marketing program. So if you sort of see Qantas and Virgin going out and getting more and more bonus partners, that's their way of incentivizing customers to spend money through that merchant. So, for example, BP. So BP are buying points with Virgin every time someone fills up. So it's a massive marketing program.
Well, I was reading that for Qantas, it's the most profitable part of their business is their frequent flyer system. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And actually, for most airlines around the world, the frequent flyer system is the most valuable part of the airline, which is super interesting.
Look, it's been fascinating talking to both of you. I'm only sorry I didn't get a chance to ask what I can do with my old Ansett frequent flyer points. I've got quite a few of them still, and I'm not quite sure how to use them. But it's been great to talk to you both.
Thank you very
much. Thanks very
much. I've been speaking with Ben Schlappig. He's blogger and consultant at US company One Mile at a Time, and Steve Huey, founder and consultant at iFlyFlat. You're listening to Blueprint for Living on RN and across the Asia Pacific on Radio Australia with me, Michael Williams.